if the media continues to decline. Like, we lost 5,000 journalists in Australia over the last decade.
Yeah.
If the media were to continue to decline and the business models of the tech platforms were to continue unabated, I think we head down a path where we've got no public square. We've got no anchor point. Facebook kind of feels like a public square, but it's actually a private shopping mall. Everything you do is there for a commercial reason. Mm. And it might feel open, but it's actually a network that's designed to watch you.
One for mum, one for dad, and one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be an Australian.
Budgets are about choices, Fran, and you show what you value through the choices you make.
Dead, buried, cremated.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared.
The treasure.
Australia's basically done for. It'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
How good is Australia?
Just follow the money.
G'day, and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Institute, and by now you will have heard a lot about Facebook's Australian news blackout, which saw many government pages, health authorities like the AMA, the Bureau of Meteorology, and even many charities and community group pages shut down on Facebook overnight with very little warning.
Have you heard the news? If you're on Facebook, probably not.
It's Facebook versus Australia.
News sites are black. They've gone black.
The tech giant shut down pages of news outlets, government departments and charities.
Decision to block users in the country from all news content on its platform.
Facebook banned Australian news and information from its platform in response to the government's news media bargaining code, which seeks to address the bargaining power imbalance between tech giants like Google and Facebook and the Australian news media. And it was first proposed by the ACCC in its digital platforms inquiry.
Facebook is not happy with upcoming legislation being proposed in Australia.
Proposed law that would make internet companies pay media companies for content.
Force tech giants to reach commercial deals with news companies. We're going to be
federal government won't back down in its push to make Facebook pay.
But what is the news media bargaining code? Why is news so important? Is this all just a giant conspiracy to enrich Rupert Murdoch? And what will happen next? Will Australian Facebook just become the home of disinformation and conspiracy theories?
Without being able to have fact-checked quality information available to them via the pages of media outlets like the Sydney Morning Herald, We believe it absolutely will lead to misinformation, conspiracy theorists.
It's not something that we've done lightly. Publishers, not just in Australia, but around the world, they have the choice if they want to post news on Facebook.
To unpack this whole debate, I'm delighted to introduce Director of the Australia Institute's Centre for Responsible Technology, Peter Lewis. G'day, Pete.
Hi, Ebony.
Can you give us, for those people who haven't been following along, you know, every nuance of this debate like you and I, can you give us a brief summary of the code, and then we might go to where things are currently at, because I understand there have been a couple of developments in the Senate this afternoon. So what is the news media bargaining code?
Well, it all goes back to the last time that we looked at media laws back under Malcolm Turnbull. Remember him?
And vaguely.
There was a change of media ownership laws that would allow the breakdown of the old 2-in-3 rules that you could. That was really limiting media ownership to the old technologies of radio, TV and print. And the Nick Xenophon team actually required there be a review in the way that the media operates and the impact of the digital platforms. And like, this is 2017. And Rod Sims and his team at the ACCC went off and did their research, and they looked around the world, and he realised that no one had really got their head around this and that there was a big issue. And he calls it monopoly power of advertising companies. And that's what Google and Facebook have become. Their primary business is advertising. And that market power had a bunch of consequences, but particularly with the media, who were not only a competitor for ads, but what he called an unavoidable trading partner, in that they needed the platforms to distribute their news content. So Sims took this big global helicopter view, and he came out with a really robust report that anyone that is interested should download and read. And it sets this scene of the market power of tech and a range of ways that government could intervene in that monopoly power to promote the public interest.
Yeah.
He looked at privacy, how we control the information the tech platforms take. He looked at disinformation. He looked at the creepy world of ad tech, which is this weird online trading system that happens in real time whenever you go to a website. And he also looked at the case that news companies should have a right to receive payment for the value of their journalistic content to the network. Now, the cynical might say, surprise, surprise, guess what ended up being at the front of the queue? And, of course, it was the news bargaining code, which would deliver significant money to media outlets, which was the first cab off the rank in terms of reform. And it's been the law that's been making its way through our parliament for the best part of, I'd say, 9 months now. And there was the exposure draft that went through the lower house. There were Senate committee hearings in January where Google threatened to close their search engine. It was into the Senate. It went through the lower house a week ago.
Yeah, and that's kind of when this whole thing blew up.
And that's when Facebook went nuclear.
Yeah, so Google and Facebook had both warned that they would withdraw news from their service if the government kind of pursued this regulation in an effort to avoid the regulation altogether. Google ended up starting to do deals with a bunch of media organisations, but Facebook, as you said, took the nuclear option and wiped all Australian news and a bunch of other information from Facebook pretty much without warning overnight, even though they had said it they'd do it previously. It kind of, they hadn't warned anyone it was coming. And that shocked a lot of people and I think a lot of governments around the world. But where do we find ourselves right now? Because as you said, this is being debated in the Senate. What's happened this afternoon?
Well, this afternoon, the government's introduced a couple of amendments, I think, to give Facebook a reason to re-engage.
Well, Facebook has re-friended Australia. And Australian news will be restored to the Facebook platform.
They're about the notice period that the government would give before they would designate Facebook into the code. So let's get a little, go back one more step and get a little bit geeky here. So the way the bargaining code operates is it initially said, we've got a problem because traditionally media has been valued based on the number of ads that you could sell. And what the monopoly of Google and Facebook has done is separate out news from advertising. They become different industries, and we've got no way of knowing what the value of public interest journalism is. We know the cost if we don't have it because we're seeing democracies collapse around the globe, but we don't actually know the value. So you platforms and you news outlets, you go and work out what that market is and what the value is. And originally the ACCC said, go and come up with a voluntary agreement on the value. And the monopolists, Google and Facebook, didn't think that was such a great idea and they didn't really enter good faith bargaining. And the fallback was the mandatory code. So it's a mechanism. So underneath those negotiations is law that says if you can't reach an agreement, a third party will ask each of you to put your best offer on the table and we will pick the most reasonable of those, right? So that's the code.
Yep.
And Facebook has committed to entering into good faith negotiations with Australian news media businesses in seeking to reach agreements to pay for content.
On top of that sits the discretion of the Treasurer to designate platforms into the code. Now, originally, there was Google, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram that were going to be in the code. The first round of amendments before Christmas pulled out YouTube and Instagram. The TV stations were really unhappy about YouTube being out because they see them as a big competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And so Google and Facebook remain. Google and Facebook don't want to be designated.
But the Treasurer would still have discretion if...
to bring them in at a future time.
Or yeah, okay.
If TikTok became ubiquitous as a source of news, or if, you know, the Australia Institute set up a platform and got ubiquitous and got a degree of power, you could be designated, or we could be designated into the code. So then over the last couple of months, the prize for Google and Facebook to stop a global precedent has been to stay out of the code. And the leverage the Treasurer has had is said to Google first after they threatened to go to the edge of the cliff, go off and make your own deals and you won't need to be designated in the code. And now I think this is where Facebook ends up. They didn't go to the edge of the cliff, they jumped off. Mm. But now coming out of the ruins, they're saying, well, if you don't want to be in the code, do the deals.
What we saw with Google, and that was a pretty protracted and difficult negotiation as well, but what we saw with Google were significant deals, millions of dollars flowing to support public interest journalism in this country with a range of players.
Now, one of the problems is that it's all commercial in confidence, so we don't quite know what the deals are. And there are also issues in terms of ensuring that money goes to journalists. But yeah, in terms of forcing a transfer of a significant amount of money from the tech platforms to journalism, the code's kind of done its job, or it's doing its job before it's even become law.
Yeah. Why should Australians be caring about the code, and why is it important so much for journalism? You've talked about that, the decoupling of the link between advertising and news, but the ACCC singled out public interest journalism as requiring this type of regulation to counter the market power of Google and Facebook, because unlike if you're a small business or, you know, virtually most other sectors of the Australian economy, public interest journalism is important and is different because it is a public good. It does serve democracy, but perhaps that's not what Australians are getting from this debate. So why would you say that Australians should care about this code?
I think the idea of having locally made laws to manage the work of global tech platforms is really sound public policy. I do make the point that it's only the first in a wave of digital platform reform that the ACCC has proposed, and it's essential. It's not the final step, that the media and the politicians don't lose interest now that the media has received more money. But, you know, how do I defend it? Firstly, I do think a robust and diverse media is important for a functioning democracy. Two, I think that the platforms have just shown no interest in dealing with dangerous disinformation. Their business models promote division. Their business models are all about pushing us into places that we're comfortable in, that we want to be. And that the long view, if the media continues to decline, like we lost 5,000 journalists in Australia over the last decade.
Yeah.
If the media were to continue to decline and the business models of the tech platforms were to continue unabated, I think we head down a path where we've got no public square. We've got no anchor point. Facebook kind of feels like a public square, but it's actually a private shopping mall. Everything you do is there for a commercial reason. Mm. And it might feel open, but it's actually a network that's designed to watch you. So I just think on a whole range of levels, and, you know, for the Australia Institute, I think it was not a simple call to back the Morrison government passing laws that would deliver cash to Rupert Murdoch is not the normal hitting zone for the Australia Institute. And it's been challenging. And a lot of people I respect think that it's the wrong call. And I totally get why, A, the skepticism of this being the bit of big tech the government wants to regulate. And two, just the sense that it's just putting money into a company that doesn't meet those high ideals of journalism all the time, I think are totally valid. But I guess, you know, the reason we set up the centre with your support, Ebony, was we wanted to start a dialogue about sensible regulation of technology. And I think the one thing that's been interesting through this is just sitting, listening to conservative politicians in the parliament talking about the need to regulate big tech in the public interest. And it's, you know, you look at even over the weekend, there were a bunch of liberal members who were boycotting advertising on Facebook, their paid advertising, because they were taking this principled stand. And we can be cynical and say, they're just doing it for Murdoch. But I've also got a view that a lot of people end up coming to positions maybe based on self-interest, but it doesn't mean that they haven't moved. And I do think that this whole episode and watching the demonstrative power of both Google and then Facebook has had an impact across the political spectrum. And I think that's a really healthy thing. And again, like I say before, it's now incumbent on us not to stop with the easy fun bit, which is give journalists more news, because we know that journalists will write a story about that. But it's how do we get the same interest, you know, into privacy law reform so that we have rights to be forgotten, right to access our personal information, and red lines in place in the way the platforms use that information. That's going to be harder.
Yeah.
But one of the other things, I don't know if it's to justify it to myself or to sleep straight at night, was if we couldn't regulate big tech with a conservative government with the backing of Murdoch, then we never will. So we've got to say, yep, it kind of feels a bit, for some of us, like we need to have a shower afterwards, and that's fine. But as long as we say that's the start of the journey and not the end, I think it's been good for journalism.
And certainly I think it's opened up, because I don't think we've ever pretended that this legislation is perfect. And, you know, Richard Dennis, for example, has talked about, well, it might have been simpler to just do at some kind of digital advertising tax or a turnover tax or options like that. But they're actually not the options that were before the parliament. So you kind of, there is an element of you've got to work with what's in front of you. But I will just tackle that or ask you to comment on, you know, there has been a lot of pushback that this code really is just to help Rupert Murdoch. Mm. But is that accurate?
Well, it will help Rupert Murdoch. It's not only, it will help The Guardian. It will help Nine Fairfax. It will help smaller publishers, any publisher earning over 150 grand a year. It will create more viable business models for journalism in Australia, because rather than having to choose between clickbait driven advertising or echo chamber fueled firewalls or the novel charity model of The Guardian, there is now an extra plank of income that just gives those businesses ballast. And I think we will have a stronger and more diverse media ecosystem because of it. I don't think the Murdoch critique is the most effective. In terms of the tax, I love the idea of taxing advertising on the platforms. I'm less sure about whether that should be hypothecated for journalism and then a government chooses where that tax goes. I think in terms of dealing with Google and Facebook being world-class tax evaders, definitely, like, let's get a tax in and use it to fund an increase in Newstart or better services, given that they pay under, like, it's single figures. The amount they pay is ridiculous because Facebook in particular repatriates all their profits to Ireland. But the one that I'm more concerned about, and none of this stuff is black and white, there is a really valid argument that what this code does is actually make our media more reliant on Google and Facebook, and that they will have, there are two concerns there. One is, does it mean that they become part owners and there's a tendency for some organisations not to scrutinise them with the same degree of independence? But the second one, which it's come out over the last few days after Facebook turned off the tap, you know, a site like Junkie has basically been set up to push content on Facebook. Mm. So if all our news sites end up being, you know, the ABC totally relies on Facebook for their community. So if all this does is entrench journalism to be delivered via the platforms, then, yeah, I think that would not be the optimum outcome. So, look, I think there's a lot of really intelligent, well-meaning people trying to get their head around this. What holds us all together is that we do want to see a vibrant public square that isn't dominated by Murdoch.
Yeah.
But you're right. This was the proposition in front of us. So it wasn't a bargaining code or a tax. It was a bargaining code or nothing.
Yeah.
You know, so where do you go with that? I feel comfortable in the position we've taken as an institute.
And keeping it with the original, I guess, problem that the ACCC was trying to solve, which is the market power and the monopolies of Google and Facebook, you know, I have heard people kind of talking about, oh, well, you know, setting up an alternate social media and why is the media so reliant on Facebook, but that is a function of their market power, because even if you do manage to set up a really successful alternative, how long is it before Facebook or Google just buys that and adds it to the conglomeration?
Well, you know, that, and you know, that's a lot of the focus of antitrust in the States. Like, that's what happened with Instagram. It's what happened. It's what happened with WhatsApp. When a good network builds, these guys acquire them. One other point I'd make is I think it's interesting. Google in search, you know, there were credible alternatives for search. They wouldn't have been as good, but you could have used Bing or DuckDuckGo.
Yep.
I kind of have this thing now where it's a bit like with day-to-day search, I'll go to DuckDuckGo because I know my data's not being collected. It's only if I really need to find something, I go to Google. So, you know, you can't only give your data up when you really need to.
Yeah.
But Facebook, there isn't an alternative for a lot of people because it's the human network rather than the service that you're going there for.
Yeah.
There's really interesting discussions going on in the States around the idea of public digital infrastructure, and I think we need to be part of that discussion. I think one of the things over there is they struggle to comprehend what could be the solution, like networks of not-for-profits or co-ops, because they don't have a history of public broadcasting, whereas we in Australia have a public broadcaster with a really active network of users and a really strong brand. Unfortunately, at the moment, they've outsourced all their community operations to Facebook because it's cheaper and legally safer.
Yeah.
But I think there is a world in which we spend a bit of time reimagining what a public network could look like and make a call on whether that's a long-term future for the ABC, because at the moment, for all of its fantastic digital product, it's still a broadcaster, and we're living in a network world, not a broadcast world. So I think there's interesting ideas to embrace. I think one of the upsides of this whole episode is I think it's allowed mainstream Australians to recognise their reliance on these platforms and maybe pause a little bit to contemplate whether that's a good thing. And, you know, that's really what our centre's all about.
Yeah.
World first media bargaining code.
Australia could set a marker for other governments to follow.
And the world has logged into watch.
Entre Facebook y las autoridades de Australia.
All eyes are on Australia right now.
Australia shapes as the test case, but the EU is pressing ahead with tougher copyright laws targeting online platforms.
As global anger at the tech giant spreads.
How much is this being watched globally? We've been in touch with some, you know, journalists and economists from the United States, and it's often talked about as kind of world-leading legislation. But do you think, given Facebook did turn off the tap, it followed through on its threat, it did shut down huge numbers of pages from civil society in Australia, do you think other governments around the world will be looking at that and kind of, I guess, taking note for their own responses and regulation?
Well, you know, I think what Facebook was setting out to do last week was to send the world a message that we won't be regulated. I think what they ended up with was a message that we're prepared to turn on our own users to promote our commercial interests. Only overnight, the EU, with the support of European publishers and Microsoft, have started down the path of a bargaining code on the Australian ACCC model. The idea of a systemic response to the monopoly power of these two massive advertising companies is being seen as vital for functioning democracies. And it's not the perfect model by any stretch of the imagination, but watching it play out, and it's ended up being commercial in confidence and private and who knows how much, and probably not as much as some wanted and more than they wanted to pay. But at the end of the day, there has been a transfer on what is effectively an extractive industry of people's data and attention, making massive profits, to an industry that does employ people to seek out the truth. And that's a good thing.
And I think you were just talking about the message that they'd sent to users, but certainly a strong message for governments that Facebook and Google need regulation more than just about anything else.
I would have thought so, yeah.
Just before we go, I just want to take you back. You kind of mentioned that this is really just the beginning and that the ACCC had also looked into, you know, privacy, online safety and ad tech. What do you think is coming down the road? What should be happening next after this code is resolved?
So what we've got to keep our eye out are basically a tick box of these. So disinformation and misinformation, surprise, surprise, they've gone off to come up with an industry code that's been authored by the industry body Digi, which really has a whole bunch of nice sounding mission statements and nothing enforceable. That is going to need to be scrutinised with a view to having legislation underpinning that to require platforms to keep their systems clean. Ad tech is really complex and there's currently a discussion paper out. We've got to put a submission in by Friday, Ebony. So after that, we might search. We'll try to make it make sense to people. But it's actually naming what's going on and then working out practical ways of regulating it because it's the Wild West in that world.
And that's when you say ad tech, is that like the infrastructure kind of that underpins digital advertising?
So that is the real-time trading room for your attention that is operating every time you go to a website with banner ads. There's a little auction going on
in
within
the background.
A split second to see who'll pay the most for you, Ebony, to be looking at that ad. And it's bizarre. It doesn't work for the industry because no one knows the cost or the value that's being created. It's a classic new product that's never been regulated. And probably the most important one though is it's working its way through the Attorney General's department at the moment, and the first lot of consultations was the end of last year, and I don't think anyone engaged properly, but it is looking at privacy law, particularly around the rights of individuals to their personal information that is given up online. What constitutes informed consent? Is it just a tick box, or do you actually need to know what you're giving up? Do you have a right to be forgotten? I'm really interested in looking at whether we can come up with a proposition that, because I've spoken to a lot of people, they say the horse is bolted, it's too late.
Yeah.
Let's push for clean slate laws that, given that none of this consent's really been given, let's give people the right to say, I want a clean slate. I want you to wipe all the personal information you've collected about me to date and start again with real agency on it. And then where are the red lines? Should there be secret trades in your personal information that sites that organizations are doing? You know, what is your behavior and your activity something that somebody can just grab, or is it something that's intrinsically yours? Mm. So I think there's really interesting thinking to be done. Again, it's not quite as superficially sexy as saying that we need to force big tech to pay for news, but it kind of deals with the other part of it, which is how does big tech interact with people. And again, wouldn't it be great to think that we're not just world leaders when it comes to supporting media companies like News Limited, but we can also be world leaders when it comes to asserting the rights of individuals? And that's a point. You know, we've been working with unusual allies over the last period, but, you know, my aim is to keep them on board for the rest of the ride.
Mm. Well, we might leave it there. Thanks very much, Pete.
Good on you, Ebony.
This episode was recorded on Tuesday, the 23rd of February, 2021, and things may have changed since recording. You can visit centreforresponsibletechnology.org.au for all their latest research and content. And they're on Twitter at Centre for Responsible Tech, and the Australia Institute is at the Oz Institute with an AUS. My Twitter handle is Ebony_Bennett with a double N double T, and Pete is at Peter Lewis EMC. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy, and our theme music is by Jonathan McPhee from Pulse and Thrum. Stay safe out there, everyone, and thanks for listening.